good afternoon and good evening, everyone. It's the ALAC Executive Committee Conference Call on Friday, the 31st of May, 2013. The time is 14:06 UTC, and I'll hand the floor over to Julia for the roll call and the apologies, please.
Thank you, Olivier. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the ALAC XCOM monthly call on Friday, 31st of May, 2013 at 14 UTC. On the call today, we have Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Tijani Benjema, Carlton Samuel, Julie Hammer, Rinalia Abdulhaim, and Alvin Greenberg. We have apologies from Sébastien Bachelet. And from staff, we have Heidi Olrich, Matt Ashkiani, Sylvia Janko, Isla Gruber, and myself, Julia Charvelin. I remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you very much, Julia. Have we missed anyone on the call? Have we not mentioned anybody? No. I don't see anyone that we've missed. So let's go directly to agenda item number 2 and the review of the action items from our previous XCOM meeting and our previous ALAC meeting as well. Matt and I are still yet to clean those up a little bit because I think that there's some long-term goals which we can probably start cleaning up with time. So that will probably be a small action item for Matt and myself. But just looking at the open action items, there is a webinar specifically for the RALO leaders and the ALAC to be set up on the questions to the community on accountability and transparency within ICANN. That's been done, completed, thank you. It was well attended. I didn't check whether there were a lot of input from RALOs in the ATRT2 process. I'll probably check afterwards and see. The next one, Holly Reich, is to be the ALAC representative for the GNSO work on policy and implementation in the ICANN context. And of course, there's a thing there which says, should it become a CCWG? So it hasn't become a CCWG. It's a GNSO working group. It will remain a GNSO working group. The response, or rather lack of response, I've had to asking for a CCWG. But the informal response I've received was that this was not considered. And Holly is in that working group. I'm glad to also mention that Eduardo Diaz has also stepped forward to be another person from the ALAC directly in the working group, especially in the chartering part, the early chartering part for it. There is to be an agenda item on the next ALAC agenda regarding the GNSO work on policy and implementation.
Olivier, it's Alan. I have my hand up.
Yes, Alan. Yeah. I was going to go through all of these and then open the floor afterwards so as to try and go a bit faster.
Fine.
Thanks, Alan. Agenda item on the next ALAC agenda regarding the GNSO work on policy and implementation in the ICANN context. That's completed. And finally, on the open action items, Heidi is to get in touch with CCNSO staff and to see if there's any interest in a joint ALAC-CCNSO meeting. And this has been completed. We've had some feedback there, and Bart has come back to us and has basically come up with a suggestion that maybe we wouldn't have would not have meetings together in Durban, but let's have a working group working so as to prepare something for Buenos Aires. The floor is now open for comments, questions, additions, etc. And Alan, you now have the floor. Alan Greenberg, go ahead.
Thank you very much. My only comment was going to be we have never before for a GNSO working group or drafting team had a representative of the ALAC. We have always had people who speak on their own behalf and on occasion go back to the ALAC for discussion of a certain issue so that it could be presented as an ALAC position. But in general, we've never had a person who's formally there as a representative. I don't object, but I'm just pointing out that that's the case. I'm saying that on GNSO working groups, we have done it in other venues before. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Next is Cheryl.
Thank you. I know I wanted to put my hand up for two issues, but I'll respond to Alan's point first, Cheryl, for the record. Yes, Alan, I hear what you're saying, but the GNSO rules were hard won and carefully designed, and our own rules regarding liaisons to work groups were specifically worked around that way, so that there could be a formal voice and a required nexus, a feedback, two-way feedback between a sending body, in our case the ALAC, and the now open, more open GNSO and other working groups. So I think if we use the term rather than formal representative, small L liaison, because that is literally what fits in with the actual rules for GNSO work groups, that we would be fine, and we would be setting the correct precedent, recognising that we have set liaisons to the cross-community work group and JAS, etc., etc. But for a pure and particularly drafting team, yeah, I hear what you're saying, Alan, but in fact, this is probably what we should be doing, and I guess from now on is a good thing. A small L liaison is excellent. Yep. And obviously, for the record, both Alan and I are also on the drafting team. You're on the drafting team as well, aren't you, Alan?
I'm not sure if I put my name in, but I will if I haven't.
I think I did. I certainly am as well. Okay. And that's why I think it is important that you have Holly listed as a small liaison of the ALAC.
Cheryl, for clarity, I wasn't objecting. I was just pointing out that this is a new set of words that we hadn't used before, and I wanted to make sure it was being done consciously and not slipped into something because we randomly picked new words.
Cheryl here understood, and in fact I was making the point, not only do I think it's a good thing, but the words should be not ALAC representative, but ALAC all L liaison.
Yeah. Right. Okay, that's understood. Can we move on to the next point, please, Cheryl?
I've practically forgotten it. What was the first thing you talked
about? The thing. The webinar for rail leaders. No, you wanted to deal, I think, probably with the ALAC CCNSO meeting.
Thank you. Yes. That's correct. Yes, I just wondered, seeing as there's no reason why not, to simply forward the email circulated from BART to the leadership and liaison, why not forward that to the ExCom list? And then they've all got it.
Yeah, that will be done.
Thank you.
I can forward that. Okay, so one quick note then for Matt, based on the discussion we just had now. When he writes the action item or tags the action item with Holly Reich as being completed, Matt, if you could please change the word ALAC representative to ALAC liaison with a small L, so that for the record this is correctly interpreted. Let's move on to the next thing, and that's the newly assigned action items, still from our last XCOM call. Olivier is to check how the decision was and if the board chartered the GNSO on work on policy and implementation in the ICANN context with a possible statement to the board to be drafted if needed. This is one thing which I have not done, so I will have to check that. Let's leave this over to the side for the time being. The next one is for Heidi to include the ALAC agenda items in the main body of the ELS decertification and certification issues. And that's all of that is done. So that's completed. Any comments on those last two points? Now get on to checking with the board how this working group was charted. Right, let's go for the next set of action items. That's the one from our last ALAC call. Again, there's some cleanup required, but we'll look into the open action items. There are the two action items regarding the WCIT. Okay, am I still here?
You're here. Hello.
Yes, you're here. Carry on.
Temporarily you were here, but you're gone now.
Olivier?
Gisela and Julia, this is Heidi. Have we lost Olivier temporarily?
Okay.
Okay, he's cut off.
I'm going to have to come back into the AC room. It's playing up badly for me. Sorry, guys. Grumble, grumble.
Gisela, are we dialing him back? Sorry, Heidi, Gisela here, just bear with us for a second. We'll update you immediately. Thank you. We're just liaising, Gisela here, we're just liaising with Aditya to get him back online.
Okie dokie.
Is it an uppercase L or a lowercase L?
Lowercase L.
I'm back.
Hey!
Okay.
Okay. So the subscriber had not arrived for some reason. Where are we now? Oh, I have the floor. Have we moved on?
Oh. No, we
okay.
Have the first item.
No, but the WCIT. So the WCIT,
yeah.
That's still pending. And then the revised ALAC rules of procedures to be translated, that's still pending as well, I believe. That's still in progress. And then the newly assigned action items. Olivier is to follow up with the drafting team on the Straumann proposals TM50 plus 50 derivations. I have followed up and emailed emailed Robin Gross with a copy to the different members of that team. We haven't had any reply yet, unfortunately. Olivier is to begin the discussion regarding ALS accreditation on the ALAC mailing list with a possible view to form a task force. There has been some discussion on this, and in fact we'll be speaking about this a little bit later on during this XCOM call. Matish Jani is to ensure that the first draft of the ALAC statement FY14 draft operating plan and budget is posted to the corresponding workspace. That's been done. Is the FBSC notified? I think all of the ALAC was notified by email. Perhaps there needs to be also a note to the finance and budget subcommittee. They have. Oh, perfect, Matt. Thank you. And finally, so that's completed as well. And finally, Olivier is to work with staff on a decertification vote wording process and implementation. In fact, Alan has been dealing with the wording and will be speaking about this in a moment. Any comments regarding this? I see Alan putting his hand up. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. Not quite on the subject, but on related to the last bullet on open ones on the ALAC rules of procedure. Heidi, regarding the decertification wording for the adjunct document, I'm assuming you have heard back from Sam. Can we assume that a slight heading change is okay and start, and I can issue the motions on that? And if we have to pull back, we'll pull back.
Yeah, Alan, I'm sorry, I didn't follow up on that. I'll get to that. I'll make that on my list today.
Do you want me to wait until I hear from you?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
It should be mid-morning.
Okay. I can't imagine a heading change will trigger a board review, but I sure hope not anyway. But thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, Alan, and thank you, Heidi, for this. Let's move on then. Let's go for the items for discussion if no one else wishes to pursue the action items. Okay, good. Let's have a look directly at 3B, the statement or endorsement currently being developed, reviewed, or voted on by the ALAC. The first one, the FY14 draft operating plan budget. Tejani has very kindly put a statement together. It's not a very long statement. It's quite short, just pointing out a number of things. I'm somehow finding that we shouldn't really spend too much time on this, and I have to record my disappointment with the process in that the date of submission, the closing date for this comment period is the 21st of June. The board has to vote on the full budget by the end of the month. That gives them less than a week to read any of the comments that have been there. I'm not quite sure how much of an impact the comments would make to...
Olivier, it's better than a few years ago when a comment period ended at noon and they voted at 1 o'clock.
It's good when you have institutional memory like Alan.
I was the only one, I believe, to submit a comment to that particular period. It may have actually been 3 hours. I'm not sure.
Thank you very much, Alan, for reminding us of this. In fact, I shall slap myself on the wrist then for having been a grumpy person and not being happy about the great improvement.
Absolutely.
In the process.
Absolutely.
Okay. Right. That will teach me. That will teach me. Okay.
Just for the record, I don't know when they're going to vote. They could do this on 1 hour, too.
That's another thought, yeah. So that's the first one. I think that we'll submit it as is. It's open for comment at the moment. I'm very happy with it. There is one point in there which notices something to do with the ATRT2 professional service being only $37,800. In fact, this matter was discussed on the ATRT2 call yesterday, and an explanation was given, which didn't sound too convincing. It's one of these software problems and things. Isn't it, Alan? I mean, maybe you know better to explain.
Olivier, yeah, Olivier, Denise had sent around a note saying it's 90,000, not 37. So that
yeah,
may mean
she said it's 90,000, but 37 only shows up on the budget. And I thought that when you actually present a budget to the community, the number is actually the real number, not another number.
You could point that part out.
Okay. So maybe, Tijani, if you're on the call, maybe, yes, I hear you. Tijani, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Olivier. You're right regarding the short time between the closing of the public comments and the voting of the budget. But this year it's a special year. I think that the next year, the upcoming years will be better because we'll have all our time to do the process as it was planned before. So I don't think we have to blame them for this year. Regarding our statement, today is the deadline for submission to the public comments. I don't know how we will proceed. Shall we have a vote? Shall we have it after submitting the statement? I don't know. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tijani. Yes, today is the deadline for the initial comment closing date. There is a reply closing date on the 21st of June, and so we will be submitting our statement in the reply period. So effectively the call for comments opened yesterday for the at-large community, closes on the 7th of June for the at-large community, and then the vote would take place from the 9th until the 16th. And the date of submission would be the 17th of June, which at the end of the day is ever so close to the end of the period. Yes, Tijani, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. The reply period is to reply on the other comments. And I don't think that our comments will be a kind of reply for the others. So perhaps we should perhaps submit our comments now, and as a comment, and then the statement will be voted later and sent later, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Tijani. I thought that because we are in the case for several statements at the moment, we are in the reply period. I thought we would use our right to be able to comment on anything and everything at any time. If you do believe that because of the fact that we're submitting the statement in the reply period, it will not be taken into account, then I'm open to suggestions about this. Matt, I noticed you've got your hand up, and after Matt, I'd like to hear from others on the call regarding this. Matt Ashtiani, please.
Hi, this is Matt for the record. I just wanted to let everybody else on the call know that I submitted a note to the PC yesterday stating that the ALAC would be submitting a statement during the reply period.
Ah, fantastic. Super. So, Tijani, does this...
Okay. Okay. But, Olivier, if I may, to be considered, it must be done in the comment period inside the process of the public comment. And then we have the right to submit our any statement at any time, so we can submit it later when we want. Perhaps now, because they will compile now the comments, and they will try to consider them. So perhaps we will take the advantage of this opportunity to make our comments inside the others.
Are you saying, Tijani, that they're going to compile the initial comments now? I'd be surprised. I thought they would wait until all the comments are in.
No. The second period will be a period of comment, of a reply on the comments. So the reply on the comments will complete the comment period. But the main comment period is now. And I don't think they will have time to compile all the comments and the reply on comments in so short time to give it to the board afterwards.
It's a very fair point. Alan Greenberg?
Yeah, despite the best intentions of the ATRT1 in recommending this, they accept all comments and will compile them. If they have to go back and adjust them because of something they didn't consider, they will. But the very action of replying means they have to go back and change the summary if necessary. So whether they choose to do a jump start and do some of the compilation before the very end and then fix it is a staff issue. There has been no case that I'm aware of that a comment submitted in the second period is ignored because of the timing. So I have no problem with submitting a draft and saying we're going to vote on it, but so far that has, what Tijani is discussing has never happened, and there's no indication it's going to happen on this one. So I think we can proceed any way we want as long as we get something submitted, and preferably say we voted on it before the end of the reply period.
Thank you very much, Alan. But you see, on the contrary, I'm quite concerned about issuing a call for comments for our community on the 29th and just giving them 2 days to come back to us. If we're going to submit a comment, it needs to be something which our whole community has reviewed. So,
yeah, but if we submit the text now, it has to be, this is a draft which is still under discussion.
We're not. It's likely to change, and we've been bitten a number of times where we submitted a first. Except if we are at the point of voting, but if we're at the point of still commenting, sometimes we've had some drafts changing dramatically, and it would make an absolute farce of the ALAC if we were to submit a first comment and then another one afterwards that goes directly against the first.
And from my point of view, I don't think it's going to make a difference in terms of how it's treated by staff and the board.
Good, thank you.
At least we've never seen an example where that's the case.
Thank you. Let's move on. The second one, the new GTLD board committee consideration of GAC safeguard advice. A statement was very nicely drafted by Alan, and I've just put it a few minutes ago on the wiki. And so that's open for consultation by everyone at the moment. I hope that Matt can send out the note as soon as possible. It's interesting because it's actually been renamed for some reason. So the first draft is submitted, it is in there. The timing is going to be as well going to be out of date since the initial comment period closing date was the 15th of May, but the reply closing date is the 4th of June. That's a very, very tight thing. So what we will do on this actually is to close the comments on the 4th with a 1200 UTC and then start the vote and submit this and follow up with the vote afterwards.
Ratification.
That's when we get the ratification vote. And that's been done in the past as well. The next one is, if I can go back to this, the next one is the proposed final 2013 RAA. The ALAC is voting on the drafted statement, and I'm glad to have seen so much discussion going on about the language to this. It's a very important statement. The next one, the question is to the Committee on Accountability and Transparency within ICANN. I'm not sure how much impact we've had on this. I don't think the ALAC should be drafting a statement because we're going to meet with the ATRT2 in Durban. So that's a time when we can probably, if we prepare correctly, we can probably have a good structured brainstorming and discussion with the people from the ATRT2. And finally, the statement on WCIT outcomes, that's still in my pocket. It needs to come out at some point. Currently open public comments. Who is information status policy? And it was decided to have no statement. Any comments on this? I see Alan has put his hand up. Alan, you have the floor.
Yeah, on the ATRT, I really think we have to at least submit a brief one-paragraph thing identifying the topics that are of major concern and that we want to talk about in Durban. The meeting in Durban is likely to not be as satisfying as we want. These meetings never have enough time to talk about things in depth. So I think we at least need to identify the issues, and we can follow up with you. I mean, you and I know that the schedule for ATRT is such that if we get something in by the end of Durban, then it's still going to be considered because that's where the discussion is going to happen. But I think we need to go on record as identifying the issues that are important at the very least.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. There was a statement that was not a statement, sorry. There was a text that was drafted by several members of the at-large advisory committee that was sent to the ATRT2 and co-signed by those people, and that's the one which asks for ICANN to assume its regulating function. I wonder whether there's any traction for this to be included in a wider ALAC statement. I did ask the authors whether they were interested in trying to see if there was support, but I didn't receive any feedback on that. Are there any thoughts here about this? I know that several of the authors are on the call. Alan Greenberg.
I have a thought. Having discussed in both open meetings and privately a number of issues with Brian, the first question he's going to ask on that comment is, and exactly what is the relevance to the remit of accountability and transparency? And I'm not sure that statement makes it very clear. And if we want ATRT to consider it strongly, I think we really need to tie the two together. There's a lot of problems with ICANN which have nothing to do with accountability and transparency. So I think that link has to be made clearly, because otherwise it is possible that the group will look at it and say it's really outside of the remit.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Alan. Anyone else? I don't see anyone putting their hand up. Well, seems like there's no traction to be to go with an actual longer statement than just identify what our main issues are. Does anyone have any suggestions as to what the main issues are for us?
On the XCOM, I already said I will send something out, and I will.
Okay,
not on the XCOM, on the ALAC meeting, rather.
On the ALAC meeting, yeah. Okay. Good. Thank you. Let's move on to the next thing, the review of the ALAC meeting of the 28th of May. That's our last call. You've got the agenda that is linked to the current agenda. Is there anything that you'd like to focus on specifically that we think we haven't addressed? This is going rather fast as a meeting today. I know that ALSD certification is something we will touch on in a moment. But consensus call on the naming of members of the at-large objections follow-up group. Okay, I can just follow up and say that both Seth and Rinaldi are now in the objections follow-up group. The discussion of the GNSO work on policy and implementation. Not very much to report on this. RALO selections, earlier results requested, that call has been made to all of the different RALOs. Can I just ask Heidi a quick update? What's the follow-up on this? Are things proceeding in all regions? Heidi or Sylvia?
On the election. So, let's see. We're getting to have, AP Rallo is voting already on its officers and ALAC members. AFRALO, Tijani, we're going to be sending out a note to you and Fatimah and Aziz later today on announcing the ALAC schedule or officer scheduled, suggesting that we start on Monday. URALO, there's a schedule for the officer election set, and again, we'll notify Wolf and Oksana today about the proposed ALAC schedule. LACRALO, the same. Their officer elections are completed, and we'll notify them today about the proposed ALAC schedule. And then NERALO, there's been some discussion on the schedule. It looks like they are going to go ahead and start very shortly. I just need to confirm with Garth and Darlene when they would like to start it. So it will be somewhat in sync with the others, and I'm hoping that the elections will still end before at least the end of the Durban meeting. But that remains to be seen.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Heidi. And may I take the opportunity at the moment to mention that you and your team are doing an excellent job. I know you've got very little bandwidth at the moment. There's so much going on. And I'm asking everyone on this call, if in your region there's anyone who is placing high demands on staff and thinking, why are they not getting their answers back within 2 minutes or 2 hours, then that's because staff is currently quite overstretched. So I would appreciate if we don't make too many demands on our staff at the moment due to various things. And I think one of them is the fact that the Durban meeting is only a few weeks away, 6 weeks or something. So that's kind of very, very close to us. Let's continue through the monthly ALAC call. I don't think there's anything else in there that we need to really look at specifically, since some of it is duplicated here, especially the meeting schedule, etc. I'm a little concerned just with regards to the at-large working groups. Some working groups are putting, you know, that we're running actual reports during the ALAC call, but then some working groups are not filing any monthly update or bi-monthly update as to what the working group has been up to. And it's a bit hard for newcomers to keep track of this. So it'd be good if you are a member of the working group, or if any of you are chairing some of the working groups, to check if it's up to date. That would be pretty good. Okay, next, let's continue on this.
Olivier, Rinalia has her hand raised.
Oh, I see Rinalia, yes. Okay, go ahead, Rinalia, please.
Thank you, Olivier. During the ALAC meeting, there was a discussion between Alan and Carlton about the user experience study on the activation of EN TLDs and implications on users. I have been in touch with Edmund because I know that he wants to respond to that, and he has drafted something, and I've seen it. The challenge is that it is not in the format of a response to the questions that were posed. So I think that I have to do a little bit of work with him first before I can float that to the IDN working group and the ALAC. So I think that because the deadline is 1st of July, it'll be done sometime in June. That's just an update to expect it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Rinalia. That's very helpful. That's good. You see there's movement on that as well. And of course, one thing I do have to mention, the filing of the IDN and variance and TMCH and variance statement that we completed this month. There's been a direct reply from Steve Crocker, the chair of the board, that they are considering this and working on it. So it's being acknowledged, and I have asked in my cover note that we get a reply from the board specifically on this, since it is an important an important statement. We have also a new form of front page, which we have pioneered with this one. There's a slightly different format to the statement. First page, and it includes a little summary of the points that are developed in the statement itself, just a few handful of lines. So I invite you all to have a look at them. Right. Any other comments or questions or suggestions or follow-ups on the ALAC monthly call? I see Julie Hammer. Please go ahead, Julie.
Thanks, Olivier. Just wondered whether you wanted to touch on the issue that was raised by Jean-Jacques during our meeting with the ESSAC in Beijing. There was an action item on that, which I was embarrassed to admit at the meeting last time that had completely missed my attention. The action item was to look into the possibility of forming a joint working group to look at deep packet inspection. I went back and had a look at the transcript and what we'd actually discussed about that, and it wasn't really clear in that brief discussion what aspect of DPI Jean-Jacques was interested in looking at. So I think at this stage we don't really have enough perspective on the possible scope of that topic of discussion to go ahead and look at putting together any sort of a working group. And I guess I'm just looking to the ExCom for some views on Hello?
I'm not quite sure what the moment
is. Sorry, can everyone hear me?
Yes, again.
I don't know what that noise was.
The noise 2 years full of earwax, but that's fine.
I guess in considering this action item, something we might want to consider is the issue of DPI a high priority for the ALAC, and if it is, then who is interested in this issue in addition to Jean-Jacques? And even if we are interested, do we feel we have the capacity to actually put some effort into this topic at this point in time? Is it something we want to spend time trying to discuss with ESSAC in Durban? And I guess in relation to that too, I am conscious that the ESSAC itself and the members are very bulked out in their commitment at the moment with all of the work going on new GTLDs and namespace collisions and so on. So I guess I'm really looking to the ExCom for some guidance as to whether to try and move forward on this action item or whether to just leave it to one side for the time being.
Thank you very much, Julie. It's Olivier again. I'm just wondering whether the DPI is in ICANN's mandate or remit, and I wonder, my suggestion would be to maybe for you as our liaison to ask the ESSAC whether they believe the DPI is in ICANN's remit and ICANN's mandate. But I see a lot of people having put their hands up, so maybe I should first open the floor to others. Yes, Julie, go ahead.
May I just make one other comment before hearing what others think? I think DPI is quite a broad topic, and Patrick alluded to that in that meeting. and some aspects of it are probably within ICANN's mandate, but other aspects may well be. So I think it would be important to understand the scope that Jean-Jacques was actually thinking about. So, interested in hearing what others think.
Okay, thank you, Julie. Next is Alan Greenberg, Carlton, and Cheryl. So first, Alan Greenberg, please.
I thought Cheryl was first.
Well, Cheryl is at the bottom of the line. I don't know.
He moved.
She's appeared and disappeared.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What Julie just said. I don't think at this point we should butt it to the ESSAC to ask them. The person and people who proposed it, there were Jean-Jacques and a number of people supported him. I think the onus is on them, as I said in the ALAC meeting, for them to identify the aspects of deep packet inspection that they think are within ICANN's remit and need our involvement. It's surely an interesting subject and relevant to many of us in many aspects of our lives, and a reality we're not going to stop regardless of what ICANN decides. But I think the people who proposed it have to explain what aspects of it they believe are within ICANN's remit and to help make the justification for why we should be spending time on it. So I think that's the order it has to be done, and not booting it to the ESSAC to ask them the opinion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. I see agreement from Julia on this. Next is Carlton Samuels.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Carlton Samuels for the record. I was about to say that I don't think really it should be going back. I agree with Alan to the ESSAC to ask their opinion. What it should be is was for us who've thought it might be a useful thing to look at to explain why we think it is. I'm not speaking for Jean-Jacques or anybody else, but for me personally, if you look at the packet inspection as one of the areas in which governments attempt to surveil and look at what's happening on the internet, you could make the case that insofar as that is a generic, and I use the word generic advisedly, topic, the remit of stability and security immediately comes into play, because one of the things that usually happens is that when people are trying to muddy their trails on the internet, it may have unintended consequences. And to me, it's good to explore what kinds of unintended consequences may be. One of them that you may think of in our context is the obfuscation that comes with WIS, for example. That certainly, if I know I'm going to be surveilled, then one of the things that I might do is to fight very hard to cover my tracks and create a record that is non-existent. That, to me, is just one possible response. And so I would want to hear from people what they think the response. A reaction is an equal and opposite reaction. What they think the reactions might be and how those reactions might, in fact, decrease the stability and security of the Internet. That's my thinking on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Carlton. Next is Cheryl Langdonor.
Because Alan has his hand back up, and much of what I wanted to say has already been said by others, it might be that everything I want to say is going to be said.
Why don't you say it anyway, Cheryl?
No, go ahead, Alan.
Hi. By the way, sorry, this is Evan. Sorry to butt in. Just to let you know, I've just joined the call, and I'll be putting myself on mute because I'm walking around.
Okay, Evan. Thank you. Welcome. So then Alan first, and then Cheryl.
I was actually going to be checking something while Cheryl was talking, so I'll speak without having checked first. My recollection is ICANN has the remit of security and stability of the DNS, not of the Internet.
That is correct.
So perhaps we need to be a little bit careful about that.
Thanks, Alan. Cheryl, for the record, and yes, Alan, you are absolutely, as is often the case, if not ever, correct in that. Look, what I wanted to quickly say was, Julie, I think this is one of those topics that, because there are so many passions in the at-large community, we're going to have to bite off into small enough little bits and chew over the parts that are relevant to ICANN, but I'm not sure that it has to be done post-haste. I think it's a very reasonable thing to suggest that we have a small sub-team, and, you know, obviously Jean-Jacques Carlton and one or two others would obviously like to come forward to frame a specific set of areas or key points where the issues of deep packet inspection do have a clear nexus, if not absolute, relationship with the very narrow remit of ICANN. Once that is done, and if that was done by Durban, then we could talk about it in Durban. But if it isn't done by Durban, then we can talk about it between Durban and Buenos Aires.
Or in Durban.
And once we have a proper framed, what we would like to look at is, and we would like to have conversation about type set of questions, then that can go forward. It strikes me that this is one of the topics that may, in fact, merit, you know, a 60 or 90-minute session, even in the wider Atlas II activity. So I don't think it needs to be rushed. I think it can be a pot that's put on a very slow simmer, but we do have to get the recipe right, and I think that's enough metaphor for one conversation. Thank you.
And I've never heard so many similes in a single discussion. Thank you.
Now, if I could just lower my hand, I'll be right.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everyone. I think we've had plenty of discussion on the DPI thing. Let's just see what aspect of DPI Jean-Jacques and the people who have supported this point would suggest looking at, and then we'll have to look at this again and be quite careful to make sure that it is within ICANN's remit. There is one misunderstanding about DPI is that it's only deep packet inspection. Actually, it's not. It's information tampering. There are ways these days to basically take a packet, change the information inside it, and reinsert it in the stream. And when one looks specifically at the DNS...
That's why it's interesting to me.
When one looks specifically at the DNS, for example, a DNS request, you send the DNS request, you would have a name that then asks a name server. The name server comes back with a record of an IP address.
Right.
That IP address, that record, could be changed, and therefore you might think you are on your bank's website, but in fact, it's changed that DNS request and sent you to a totally different website, which is a fake bank website. And using DPI, of course, that could be something that could be used politically. I don't think we should think of the societal effects, but certainly the technical effects are an important thing. But let's see how this is dealt with. We have to move on. So Carlton, sorry, then Julie, and then Alan, and then we have to move on.
Yeah, I just want for the record for what you said there to be recorded, because that is the gravamen of my concern, that man in the middle possibility. And that speaks to the DNS attack and the DNS instability that I thought would have been interesting to look at. Thank you very much, Olivia, for that.
Okay, thank you, Carlton. Next, Julie Hammer.
Yep, Julie Hammer. I was just going to summarize, Olivier. I will proceed then by contacting Jean-Jacques and in the first instance working with him to try and put some words that can then be sent out and I'll take your guidance on who they should be sent out to see who's interested in coming up with a scope that we might then look at within ALAC, and then decide what aspect of that scope may or may not involve ESSAC. So I'll contact Jean-Jacques to take this to the next stage, if you're happy with that.
Fantastic, thank you. And with a note that if one looks at the societal basis or the effects of DPI, the societal effects of DPI, that's probably outside ICANN's mandate altogether.
Indeed.
We're not dealing with societal effects, we're looking at the technical. Next, Alan Greenberg, and then Rinalia, and we're going to have to move on. So, Alan, please go ahead.
I was just going to point out that both Olivier and Carlton, we're moving into the discussion of the subject instead of being an executive committee deciding if the subject should be looked at and who should do the work. So, just careful. It's a fascinating subject, and we could spend hours on it. Let's not try to do the work for things.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan. I think we're just trying to provide a guideline as to what kind of work could be allowed, and for Julie to be able to go out and perform her liaison work. Rinalia Abdul-Rahim, to close on the subject.
Thank you, Olivier. Rinalia, for the rest. In the likelihood that it becomes apparent that the DPI question does not fall under the ESSAC remit, it would be useful if a suggestion can be made to Jean-Jacques and the friends that supported his suggestion on other fora where he can raise the issue, because it is a concern to consumers. It's a worthwhile issue to pursue. It's not okay to say, well, there's no fora for dealing with it in ICANN. That's the end of the story. That's not sufficient, in my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rinalia. Let's take note of this and make sure that in the response, if not within ICANN or if not within the ALAC, then which way to go? Good point. Right, let's move on then. I think we have pretty much looked over the whole of the last ALAC call. Let's look at the next agenda item, and that's the ALS decertification. We just have 5 minutes for this. Staff has done some work since it looks as though there were a lot of loose strings with regards to ALS decertification, and have actually identified four ALSs now that officially gave their, three of which gave their resignation and were never actually officially decertified. One is Alpha Ready, one is the National Consumers League, one is the Internet Society of Pakistan, and one is the Internet Users Network. I just want to inform you, I guess, that we'll probably have to then follow the procedure and conduct a vote on each one of these. Staff through hard
work.
Sorry?
Alpha Ready was voted on when it happened.
Ah, well, then we need to have some institutional memory, because that's not what I'm told by staff. So first Alan Greenberg and then Cheryl.
Olivier, could I go in the queue, please? Could I go in the queue, please, also? It's Evan.
Is this... Oh, Evan, yes, sure. So starting with... Yes, thank you. Yes, Evan, you'll be in the queue. So we'll have Alan, Cheryl, and then Evan. Go ahead, Alan.
Okay, thank you. I think Bo Brendler's organization should be in that list also, which he has said... He had said when he was still around many times, the organization no longer exists. There are no people. There are no emails. There are no nothing. I was very disturbed by a number of comments on the mailing list the other day. I'm afraid Carlton issuing one of them, which basically said if an ALS was only awake for one day a year, that's still a valid ALS. No!
You totally misinterpret what I said. What I mean by nope.
Then you need to write clearer.
No, it's very clear. What you've done is that you've internalized it to mean something else. What I'm saying is that some of them only once a year, and therefore it takes a little while longer to exact what it is that we need to do to get them decertified. I was cautioning a more deliberative approach.
Okay, understand. Nevertheless, I think we need to socialize what the requirements are that we've had for since day one for what an ALS is. I mean, Sala made the comment that, gee, if those are the rules, we're going to have to decertify a lot of ALSs. Well, the answer is maybe. But it's better if we do it than if, you know, someone on the board charters a group or hires someone to check out on how, you know, how relevant our ALSs are and finds out that some of them don't really exist. So I'm just supporting the move to start doing something about this sooner rather than later.
Thank you, Alan.
Although I support the concept of what Deb said on making sure we use due process, I would hesitate to put things in like a 90-day waiting period. I'm not sure we have the luxury on those, and I don't think it's required on ones that are certified dead and buried. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. I was actually surprised about the suggestion of a 90-day waiting period because of the fact that there was a 90-day accreditation period when I thought the 90-day was actually the maximum amount of time that could be taken and as a measure of service to say that any application would be dealt with fast enough. So I found the 90-day to be a bit bizarre. But anyway, next is Cheryl Langdon-Orr.
I was just the only reason I didn't think I had my hand up, but if I do, it shouldn't be. I was just saying I will stretch my memory and try and remember exactly what teleconference Alpha Ready we agreed to accept their resignation. Carlton, you might be able to assist me with... you were still secretary of of LACRALO when that happened. It was your last term of secretary.
Yes.
Your last term of secretary in either the September or the October. So what year were you?
It was 2009.
2009, that's right. So it must have been...
But your recollection is absolutely right, Madam Chair.
We did
have an ALAC vote to accept the resignation.
Yep, so look to September or October 2019.
Yes.
You know,
okay, thank you.
I have to go backwards in.
Thank you. Please follow up on this. I see Heidi says in the chat that the announcement was made on October 2009.
There you go.
So, okay.
Thank you, Heidi. You're on the ball.
Let's start follow up with you on this. It says yes, but there was not a vote, according to Heidi. So please just follow up after this call. We're not going to be able to resolve this right away, but we need to align our ducks in order before we proceed forward. Next is Evan Leibovich.
Hi there. Thanks, Olivia. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes,
yes.
Very well. Go
okay.
ahead.
Okay, great. All right, two comments, one of which is based on this conversation. The other one is something I have been meaning to say for a while. On this conversation, the 90-day issue, essentially, I have no problem with what's being suggested in that we should be quick to certify and slow to decertify. I don't have a problem with that as an overall point of view. But in generally, one of the things I noticed as a mistake of what we're doing is we're lumping everything together in what I'd call the voluntary decertifications and the involuntary ones.
Yes.
The voluntary certifications are the ones like Izumi's and the ones like Bose, where they came forward and they said, we don't exist anymore, please decertify us. And
right.
This is done with the consent and understanding of the people that did the application in the first place. If we had a specific thing that says, in order to be decertified, send us a letter that states this, that indicates that you have the support of the membership and or that, you know, there's certain conditions that have to be met in a letter that is sent to ALAC, and based on that, the accreditation should happen fairly straightforward and without much controversy. The issue it happens where we have problems is when we are decertifying because a group cannot be reached. And that's the point where things like the 90 days and so on come into play. I don't have a problem with a slow, deliberative process to do everything possible to make sure that an ALS is no longer functioning. And so I don't have a problem with things like the 90 days idea or anything like that. The kind of due diligence of if something is an ISOC chapter, going to ISOC and finding out what their status is, as was the case in ISOC Pakistan. And I mean, I don't have a problem with these very deliberative issues, as long as they don't get in the way of the ones like Azumi's, where I believe he's been coming back to us and said, look, I asked you to decertify us. We don't exist. You have me on board as saying that. What's taking so long? So I think we don't need to treat them all the same way, and maybe our problem is that we're doing that, treating them all the same way. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Evan. I certainly can agree absolutely with you, and it is frustrating to see some of the debates that went on lumping everything together. There are some special cases, of course, where you might have someone who was the ALS representative who has been kicked out of the chapter or of the organization and then wishes to come down and destroy the organization by having it by asking for it to be decertified. But these are special cases, and of course there needs to be maybe a process to receive the decertification request and then afterwards find a way to make sure that this still is the right person, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we're not going to design this whole process here. I see Alan and then Tijani.
Thank you very much. I support everything Evan said. I think it's relevant. I think we have, when we come to rewriting, and we need to do it really soon, the decertification rules, I think that's one of the issues we need to address. I'll simply remind people that we have a time constraint. We are going to be going to a board member selection process. There are a number of votes which might need to be taken by ALSs to follow through with that process, because some of the things require formal approval of an ALS, you know, to approve an extra candidate added in, a variety of directing votes and things like that. And we may well have a quorum issue in some RALOs if they have a large number of ALSs that don't really exist but are going to be counted as long as they are in that nebula status. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Next is Tijani.
You
can't
must
hear
be
you
muted, Tijani, at the moment.
It's probably muted.
Do you hear me?
Now,
yes,
now we hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. This question of decertification is very important to address and to address carefully. If it is critical to certify or to accreditate an ALS, I think it is more important and we have to be more careful about decertifying any ALS. I don't have any problem with everything. Only one thing. I found that the mail of Dev was very wise. Yes, we need documentation. Yes, it is not sufficient to have a call or a Skype with Izumi to tell please decertify us. No, we need something formal, written. This is very important, and this is what Dev said. And I think that everything we do have to be documented. And we have to be careful. We are not in a hurry. Yes, I understand, Alan, that we have the election of the board member, but I don't think that this will justify any hurry in this matter. We have to be careful, very careful. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tijani, and I think we all agree on this call. Can I just ask Heidi whether the space for previously certified ALSs, whether that space is ready?
Hi, Olivia. This is Heidi for the record. I've put the link in the Adobe Connect chat. At the moment, it's not very much filled in, but we can start putting in information as we collect it on the various ALSs. I'm just, if I could get an agreement that we do add those Consumers Union ALS to this list, please.
Mm-hmm.
Evan, I probably have to ask you, since you are in Naralo.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I would put Consumers Union in the same group as Mizumi, in that we had an official request from Bo Brendler, who is still alive and probably still reachable, to say, this does not exist anymore, please remove us. I don't think this is the kind of, well, have they gone away, Consumers Union still exists. It's the WebWatch program specifically that doesn't, and I believe it's possible for us to verify that. I believe Garth is still in reasonable contact with Bo, and if we need a letter from Bo basically saying it doesn't exist anymore, please decertify us, and we say this is the format of what the letter should take, I think we'll be able to get it. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Evan. And I note that so we'll basically be storing all of the information on there. Just one question to you all. Should this former at-large structures workspace, the additional information, should this actually be public, or should this be protected by a password that all at-large members or all people who have a password can reach? The difference between one and the other is that one would actually be identified and indexed by Google, the other one would not. Tijani.
I do think that we need a password.
You do?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Please put me in the queue.
Yes, please go ahead, Evan.
I guess I would argue in favor of openness, number one, on general transparency issues. And number two, in the case of we're trying to track down this ALS, but we can't find them, having that information publicly available might be able to help us find people step forward where we didn't know they existed, they didn't know we existed. So being open in that respect may actually help us find contacts that we didn't know existed at ALSs that we think are dormant, but they may not think so because they've had a change of leadership and the new leaders don't know what's going on. So that's my argument in favor of openness, not to mention just in keeping with general transparency issues. If you think of this, there's other organizations. I think ISOC has its rejuvenation process, which I believe is also pretty open. So, there are precedents for this kind of thing, and I guess I would err on the side of openness. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan. Next is Alan.
Yeah, thank you. A question and then a comment. You say password. Is that different from saying the page is only accessible to ALAC members? I've never seen a concept of a password.
The page is only accessible to those people. Yeah, it's Olivia here. The pages are only accessible to those people that would log in.
Oh, okay, fine. Not a password for the page, but you have to log in to Confluence and then be authorized to see it.
Correct, yeah. This is not only restricted to ALAC members, of course, because you do have a lot of people that are not ALAC members that have passwords and that have accounts to be able to...
We can set up access rules that only ALAC members get on, I think, I hope.
Yeah, I was not going to suggest that only ALAC members would get on this.
Okay.
I was just going to ask that whether it was... Effectively, I was asking, do we want this to be indexed on Google or not?
Okay.
That's the bottom line.
My overall comment applies then, regardless of the mechanism. We have gotten into hot water by publicizing the applications and the due diligence, and we've had our hands slapped and told not to do that, at least not to do it with the whole document unless it's parts of it redacted. Let's make sure we don't fall into the same problem again here.
Thank you, Alan. Tijani?
Yes, thank you, Olivier. You said more or less what I wanted to say. The password doesn't mean that only the ALAC members will access it. It is public for all people who have password. I think that during the process of the certification, we need it to be protected. We need to have it on a space accessible for people who have password. When the certification is done, in this case, everything will be public in a public space. That's my point of view. Thank you.
I should point out Google gets passwords for an awful lot of things, so having a logon on Confluence may not be enough to stop it being, to presume it won't be indexed.
B- But Alan, even if it's indexed by Google, if you then click onto that page and do not have a password, you can't actually consult the page. Google will not actually cache it.
Okay. All I'm pointing out is we've had our hands slapped before on similar issues. Let's be careful this time.
Thank you. Next is Rinalia.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Rinalia. For the record,
yep.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm trying to envision what the site would look like for the decertified ELSs. And I think full transparency could be a problem. And the reason that I say that is we have to, in a way, restrict the information that we put in terms of what goes on behind the reason for decertification. For example, if you can imagine a page that lists Izumi's organization, next to it would be a column that says decert certified, and it would list as a voluntary request for decertification, and it ends there. But for some ALSs, there may have been some turbulence within it that may not be good publicity for them, and they may not want that to be transparent to people outside of the internal circle of ALEC members. So I think that the general class or category of the decertification can be made public, but the details of it should not. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rinalia. Tijani, you still have your hand up?
It's an old hand.
Okay, thank you. Next is Cheryl Langdonor.
Thank you, Cheryl, for the transcript record. Just following on from Rinalia, yes, I couldn't agree more. I was taken aback, but then I'm taken aback often by what I hear in some of these calls about it being a page for decertified. I actually think that whole concept is blatantly unnecessary. The one place that we have, albeit not necessarily kept it totally up to date, a repository of every single at-large structure application exists, and that's a good thing. It's all about transparency, and it's fine. It exists from the moment that the ALS puts in its application, and it is updated in status as it is processed. When an at-large structure is either not certified or certified, it gets a note on the bottom of that file, which is public and searchable on the internet, that says it is stage 7 certified or not certified. All we need to do is have stage 7 or even stage 8, if you want a new stage, that says decertified. And do not go into any more gory details than that. The transparency is there, the accountability is there because the processes can be looked at if we need to, but there are no gory details because these could be highly contentious and inflammatory otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Cheryl. And as usual, I'm hearing a lot of different points of view, all of which I find very interesting indeed. I don't think we actually have a consensus on this subject specifically. My personal point of view, having been at the receiving end of abuse due to theoretically or perceived information that could have been that would be confidential or would actually have a nature that might hinder one's chances to find a job afterwards, was that I was going to have this information available but behind a password. So if those people really wish to get hold of this information, especially for the record, if anyone from that organization comes up later on and says, oh, by the way, we used to be here. Why are we not here? Can we apply again when we will be gone as leaders of this community and have a replacement set of people? It would be interesting or it would be good for them to be able to have access to that information and that history. I'm just concerned about the historical side of things. Already we can see that We have organizations that were decertified that no one knew about, or at least that decided to leave and or disappeared with time and no one knew about. I'm really concerned about the loss of institutional memory here. And this really is solely for the loss of institutional memory. Cheryl, again.
Thank you. Just in response, could I encourage, and perhaps it could be done on the shared screen if it's important, now do it now. If not, could I suggest we do it at another point in time? But what you all need to do is literally go to the wiki site, go into the thing that is the list of ALSs, click on any ALS you choose from number 0 to number 177, doesn't matter which one, and that record exists. That is a cradle to grave record. If you are going to remove all public information about the state of the ALS certified or uncertified and its process of being certified, then that's an entirely different argument. And I had a horrible feeling you were heading down that pathway, Olivia, so I put my hand up. But what you do already have in existence is a very simple archive which on a single line in the on the bottom of every single one of them is a status. Only that status needs to be changed with a date and a reference link if you want to, but that's entirely different to having all these gory details out. Thank you.
Thank you. The question I have, though, for you, and let me just go onto that page. So let's look at the .hiv, let's say, for example.
Pick any damn one you like.
So we have the application as an at-large structure. We've got the full application sheet.
Scroll to the bottom. And you should have the status. Stage, whatever should be written at the bottom. If it's not, then...
All I see is the application itself.
Well then, all right, go to number 9. Let's use Alpha Ready. Then if that's one that I was concerned about was giving wrong information.
So let's have a look at the last one. I'm just concerned that this list is completely out of date.
The system that was originally put together hasn't been maintained, in which case we're talking bullshit.
Yep.
Right?
There we go.
So how it's supposed to happen is how it was happening. If it's not still happening that way, well, I'm sorry, it's not my fault, but I suggest you go back to the way it was meant to then.
So, Cheryl, I note what you have here. Yes, I've clicked on Alpha Ready, and that's got the full details, and I also note that it's on the www.atlarge.icann.org website, which is the one that needs to be dynamited.
It doesn't matter where it comes from. What I'm saying is that's the type of archive that was supposed to happen as a result of the Ombudsman's report and all of the things we implemented. So,
I thank you for this because I was not aware of that, and I think staff should look at this before proceeding any further. We need to look at this quite carefully.
Anyway, my brain is...
Thank you.
Good.
Well, I note that it's not been done on any of the other ALSs, so we're going to have to follow up on this. And the difficulty is that it's on the at-large website, which is an absolute mess. Which is practically impossible to update more than just updating one or two pages a month.
Olivia, that archive of that file, those sets of files, need to be brought across to a proper space and place in the new web page anyway. When and how that's done, let's make sure Matt sets it up in such a way that how those forms are supposed to be permanently maintained is the way it is maintained.
Let's just hope that Matt doesn't retire and play with his great-great-grandchildren by the time we actually get that done.
He needs an understudy and he needs to provide a standard operational procedure to make sure anyone who does the job does it right.
Rinalia, please. Rinalia Abdul-Rahim. Let's move on. I think we have to shelve this for the time being. Rinalia?
Thank you, Olivier. I just want to say a few short things. I really like what I saw in terms of the list of the ALSs. I think that's exactly the way that it should continue to be done. And it's very clear in terms of the steps, the number of steps of the certification, etc. And I like what Cheryl is advocating in terms of the status of decertification that can easily be done. I have one request, and that is to please not list the ALSs by the number in which they are accredited, but rather alphabetically, because the numbers, people cannot remember that, but people remember the names. Thank you.
Thank you.
We can even color code them and priority sort them so that the active ones sort to the top.
At one point, I thought one could filter them and sort them online. I'm not sure that capability is there anymore.
You used to be able to, Alan, because there was the 7 stages and you could sort by stage. But and that may come back when they report them across.
Okay, let's move on. Just before closing this, I want to ask this group whether you believe there needs to be a working group looking at this. Because Alan did say, this saying, certification, decertification. Do we punt this to a small ad hoc task force or working group that would work on this? And I'll ask Alan specifically, since you're dealing with the rules of procedure and the adjunct documents. Alan?
The answer is yes, but please, please do not announce it until we approve the current set of rules. We need to get those on the books and then change them.
Yeah, I agree totally, but I was going to suggest you could actually own it, the executives could own it, because the key people who need to be involved are actually your executive anyway.
That may well be true, but let's not make any formal announcement that we are doing this, because otherwise people will say let's defer doing the approval until we change the rules, and that requires board approval. It's going to take many, many months.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree with you more, Alan.
That's a good point, Alan.
And hopefully we'll have an answer from Heidi today, and that vote will start tomorrow or Monday or something.
Okay. Thank you. Let's move on then. Let's go back to our former agenda. Let's have a look. The next one is the review of the at-large meeting schedule and agendas for the 47th ICANN meeting in Durban. Heidi, you have the floor.
Thank you so much. I'm going to just focus on 3 issues. Okay, this is Heidi, by the way. So, we've seen now, staff have seen the draft meeting schedule. Good news is that on Monday there are some fantastic meetings that the community at large community is going to want to go to, particularly in the morning. There's a long African focus agenda or meeting with a lot of interesting topics on the agenda. The other piece of good news is that for the first time I have been asked by senior executives to ensure that members of at-large come to their meetings or certain meetings, which I've never had done before, which is a sign of the success, your success. But the bad news is that there's going to be a lot of conflicts, particularly on Monday. Everyone could please go to, I just want to focus on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday very quickly. You'll see on Monday that I've had to start our day very early. Let me go ahead and put Monday into the workspace, into the Adobe Connect. So, Carlton, the first change really affects you.
I'm listening.
So it's going the meeting on the regulatory meeting, this is Monday. Let's take a look. So the regulatory meeting, I've had to move that up just to 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right before the welcome ceremony. It's the only way I can fit everything in. So that's now 7:30 to 9, then followed by the welcome ceremony. After that is this fantastic African session. Then there's a lunch session, 12:30 to 1400, Academy Working Group. Sandra's approved that. I'm just waiting to hear back from meeting staff if we can actually work during lunch. I suspect we can. Then Renalia, as I mentioned to you yesterday, I've had to move back the multi-stakeholder policy roundtable to 1400 to 1600. I've kept it 2 hours, but I'm just wondering, have I read correctly that there's only one panel now versus two? And if so, do you really need those 2 hours? Because right now you're going through the 30-minute coffee break, which is sort of a no-no as well.
Mr. Rinelli, if I could just ask you quickly on that one.
It could be 90. No, you need to
I think,
this is Rinalia for the record. A 2 hours would be very good, given that we are covering a very broad range of issues. We can try to do it in 90 minutes if we're a stretch. But if we're running into coffee break, then I think, Heidi, we can have the flexibility for extending it, no?
Well, I'm hearing you that you really want to have everyone over by the coffee breaks because
you don't
want to
do that.
Are going to be out there.
Yeah, you don't
want to
do that.
Okay. I will try to do it within 90 minutes.
Okay, thank you very much. That will help a lot then. So I'll make it, so that will then end at 15:30. There'll be a coffee break. Now, what's coming immediately after that is a long session for the five-year strategy on for ICANN. And I've had a request that we get as many ALIC people at large members at that meeting as possible. So that's a 45-minute session. Let me just take a look at this. It is a 45-minute. Yeah, that's 1600 to 1730. Sorry, 90-minute session. You need to have as many people there as possible. Then from 1745, Cheryl, is the 10th anniversary CCNSO panel discussion. Uh-huh. So that's why I've had to move everything back earlier from the day. I'm hoping that that ends at around 1830. I don't know, Cheryl, maybe you know more about that.
It will be prompt, yes.
Okay. And then at 1830, Tajani, you've agreed that we can move the showcase starting at 1830 to 2000. So if everyone's okay with that, then that takes care of Monday.
2000 is late, isn't it?
Sorry. It's
2000, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, so right now the showcase is 1800 to 1930, but it might be later depending on when that CCNSO panel ends.
Mm.
So that's 13 or 14-hour day. That's lovely. After the Sunday, it's so great.
That's what I was about to point out, Olivier. That extends that day to 14 hours.
Hang on, everyone. What's happening is that people are asking for longer meetings. I mean, normally we had 1 hour meetings, and now most meetings are 90 minutes to 2 hours, and that's what's happening. So on Tuesday, just a really quick question. I've heard yesterday from the GAC support whether the ALAC would like to meet with the GAC. So again, very tight already. I'm going to put Tuesday in the chat here. So the only time that I can see on Tuesday is within one of the policy discussions. So what that would mean is that we would need to, for example, we could shorten one of those policy discussions, ALEC policy discussion one or part two, shorten one of those by an hour and then have everyone go to the GAC room.
That would work.
If you're okay with that, I would suggest the policy discussion part two session.
The afternoon one.
Yeah, the 14 to 1600. Just reduce that to 1 hour and have everyone else go over to the GAC, possibly 15 to 1600.
Yeah, that works. I mean, traditionally, what we've actually had is to have a meeting with the board and then a meeting with the GAC all in the morning. But, of course, we've got the meeting with the ATRT2 on this time.
Exactly.
Right.
So, let's do that. But I'm just wondering, I'm concerned that by cutting our policy discussion, we're not going to be able to discuss some of these things, or we might have to add part three policy discussion at some other point.
Okay, a couple of points on that. This is Heidi again. There is, I think, a long session on Sunday for hot topics, so that basically is left open for policy topics. Yeah, it's a one-hour session, 1600 to 1700. So that's more than, you could actually say, well, that 1 hour we're losing on Tuesday is actually that's on Sunday.
Hi, this is Evan. Can I get in the queue?
Yeah.
And then we'll open
the discussion. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, Evan, I'll be on the call, but I'm not going to be on the computer in about 2 minutes. So on Thursday, a couple of things there. Where we are. So right now we have a 3-hour wrap-up session, which is 8 to 11. Okay, and then we have 11 to 12:30, the DSSA, which I know Mikey asked for to have that clear, but also I was able to get the Sally's stakeholder engagement
session from early in the morning, that would be a conflict with the ALAC session. I was able to get that back to the 11 to 12:30 slot. But I've just seen this morning that there's a call now to move that back to like 9 o'clock, which is going to be smack in the middle of the ALAC session. So, but they don't know that the reason being is that you have a three-hour session in the morning. So I think I can hold that back. But that means that there's going to be a conflict of the DSSA and the stakeholder engagement, which I think is better than having a conflict of the stakeholder engagement in the wrap-up session. So I'll let you discuss all of that. And I'll be on the call, but I'm not going to be on the computer after this.
Thank you very much, Heidi. I think you used the wrong word. It's not better. It's less worse. but then, whichever. Let's just open the floor. I see Alan and then Evan. So Alan Greenberg first.
Thank you very much. I hate to be the Grinch. Those who do not know the story of the Grinch can go look it up. But virtually all of the items that we have listed under policy discussion are process discussions. There's very, very little there that has to do with policy. IDN may be the only one. There may be something else that I've missed. I find it regrettable that what we're supposed to be there for, at least a large part of it, is what we never get time for. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. That's a very valid point. Evan?
Actually, what I was going to say dovetails nicely into what Alan was going to say. Now, I'm not a chair of the regulatory working group. I'm merely a member of it that wants to get actively involved. I think having it at 7:30 is going to be a massive mistake. You're going to have people straggling in late. You're going to have people straggling in tired after a long day of Sunday of ALAC work. And I think it is a massive mistake considering that the regulatory working group is going to be a prime source of ALAC's actual policy work. And moving it to 7:30, I think, is just going to be an awful mistake that is going to result in subpar production from a group that has to be one of ALAC's most effective. Thank you.
We could make it worse by making it 7:30 on Thursday.
Okay. Thank you, Evan. Tijani and Jamal.
Sorry, can I just ask as a follow-up on Heidi? You mentioned that there's this applicant group that we must not, this applicant meeting on Monday that we must not miss.
No, it's a strategy group.
Strategy. The 5-year strategy for ICANN.
No, but there was another, you mentioned there was an applicant meeting. Sorry, I'm not at a computer screen.
Applicant meeting. That's going to be of great interest, I think.
Sorry, it sounded like applicant.
Sorry. So
never
what we
mind.
Could do is, just while I have the floor, really quickly, we could, if you don't want to start at 7:30, then we could, we could have the academy group at the same time as the regulatory workshop.
Look, I'm not a chair. I'll defer to Carlton and Holly on this, but Carlton on the call. I mean, do you have an opinion on this, or is this just, you know, I don't want to say anything that the chair wouldn't want to do?
Well, if you see my note in the chat, Evan, I had a difficulty with it, but I was holding my fire until I hear from Holly.
I'm not in the chat. Sorry.
Yeah, I was not going to say anything right now because I wanted to hear first. I didn't want to prejudice the discussion with Holly. I was actually penning a note to Holly as I speak to ask her whether or not she would. She thinks this is okay. I personally don't like it. For the only reason that I, you know, the fellowship thing, it's burdensome, and I don't wish to be burdened at this stage of my life. But I'll wait on Holly to tell me something.
Thank you very much, Carlton. Next is Tijani Benjamin and Cheryl. So Tijani first.
Thank you, Olivier. Tijani speaking for the record. Heidi, I remember last meeting in Beijing. We I had problems at the end of each meeting because generally we start later than later than planned, and after our meeting there is another meeting starting just after it. So finishing at 14 and another group starting at 14 is not, in my point of view, doable. So perhaps we have to think about tampon time, slot of time between the end of meeting and the beginning of the other. I know there is a lot of meetings, they are longer and longer, but if we want the meetings to finish in the right way, we need this small time for the handover, if you want. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Tijani. And I agree with you that there needs to be some time, but really it's down to the meeting themselves to work themselves out, maybe finish 5 minutes early and let the others start 5 minutes late, so there's a 10-minute slot to change from one to the other. I'm concerned about adding more time because we'll end up going home at 10 p.m.
Olivier, if I could just have the floor really quickly.
Go ahead, Heidi.
Yeah, so basically there's supposed to be a 15-minute break between sessions, but there's just no way we can manage that because we're getting increasing requests for meetings as well as longer meetings. So, simple math is that just cannot happen unless we start earlier in the day. There have to be some choices, I guess.
You're absolutely right. We need to cut our cloth to suit our coat. We're asking too many meetings, so we need to get back on that.
Cheryl?
Thank you. I was going to say something else to start with, Cheryl, for the record, but I think listening to this last couple of bits of conversation, I think you might just have to say no to the longer meetings sometimes. And I suspect that the request for longer meetings may in fact be a byproduct of meetings starting later because of the issues of transition, which Tijani was highlighting. And yes, that having a 10 to 15 minute break and making it a hard stop might just have to happen to make future meetings successful. I would strongly encourage you not just to make a suggestion, Olivier, that all meetings mandatorily start 5 minutes, no later than 5 minutes after their advertised time and finish 5 minutes earlier than their advertised time. I think you could go a long way to making more work be more productive because it'll also force the chairs to manage their discussions a little bit more promptly. I wanted to ask a question, though. That's why I put my hand up. Is there a downside to, because I didn't hear a response, is there a downside to having the very important, I've just lost the word, oh dear, that's a problem, regulatory, you wouldn't think that'd be a word I'd lose, regulatory work group running in parallel or in partial parallel with the ICANN Academy. The ICANN Academy, of course, being an ICANN-wide meeting, I would have thought.
That's right. I don't know. This is all down to the room scheduling, so I'll have to resort to Heidi to let us know on this one.
If there is no downside, that seems to me to be the most appropriate solution. And Carlton, if you're penning a note to Holly at 1:15 in the morning in Australian time, could you make sure that alternate is in there? Because she, like every other woman in domain name systems, will want to be in the Women in DNS breakfast, not in anything else, from 7:30 on Monday. So I think I know the answer to your question. And to pose the solution or a probable solution might also be very wise. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Heidi?
Yes, even know that.
Really quickly, I think that the room at 12:30 to 1400 won't be a problem because it's lunchtime, so most people are eating. But the issue might be interpretation. So I would need to. I can find out if there would be two rooms with interpretation available at that time.
So is the Academy Working Group interpreted?
Yes, it is.
does the regulatory work group need to be? It's an ALAC work group. What's its makeup in terms of regional input? Carlton, Evan, do you know?
No, I don't know for sure, Cheryl.
But unless it's absolutely needed to be, I would have thought having an English and in the room as needs be, Francophiles, working with Francophiles, etc., might be a better solution than having it at Sparrowcast.
Okay. There is wisdom to what you say without knowing all of the facts.
We've got the suggestions. We'll follow on. Heidi, anything else on this? I'm mindful of the time, and we are 15
yes,
minutes
yeah,
over time already.
So, again, just to confirm that you do want a three-hour wrap-up session, because, again, that's, in the past they've been two. The last couple of meetings they've been three, and you know, you're still using every minute of that. So I'm just wondering if you still do want a three-hour session.
Well, Heidi, if we have votes, then they do require the 3 hours.
No, that's fine.
You know,
this is Heidi. That's
they're
fine.
Important,
just...
so...
Do you know
that's fine.
No? Sorry to jump in there. Olivier, sometimes you already know at this point in time before a meeting that you're going to have a reasonable set of things to vote upon. Are you aware of a vote schedule yet for Durban?
At the moment, I'm not aware of any specific votes, but what I do know is that we're in for a very noisy Durban meeting. There are a whole lot of things that are coming to head in Durban, some of which will be the response of the board to the GAC and a number of other things, all to do also with the scheduling of the launch of the new GTLDs, which I've asked several people about, and still no one has a clue when the first ones will be launched, if they will be launched.
Okay, none
so
of those
there's a lot of unknown unknowns in there that might require us to draft statements that would have to be voted on. These are really the statements that have to be voted on. And as you know, we're just before the final wave of public comment periods that suddenly arrived before an ICANN meeting. And so we are likely to also have to perhaps have some votes on statements that we have to release there and then in response to the public comments. So we're just maybe, ask me in 2 weeks' time, I'll be able to tell you.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone. Is that all you needed to know, Heidi? You know which way to run now, or?
I'll fumble along. Okay, I have to go, unfortunately, so I'll catch up on what's going on next after the call.
Okay, but there will not be a recording for the next part for you, so I'll brief you separately at another moment. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Right. So, in fact, what I would say is we'll have to continue working with Heidi on the movement of those sessions in Durban, because it looks to me like a nightmare already. And we are 6 weeks away from Durban. The last meeting, things went to a head about 3 weeks away from Beijing. So it's not looking good at the moment. Penultimate part of our agenda, the security studies on the use of non-delegated top-level domains and dotless names. That's a part which Julie and I will be speaking to you about. However, what I would like to do is to hold this agenda item in camera, which effectively means no recording, and just the XCOM and staff on the call. Looking at the current attendees on the XCOM of this call, I note that there are no people who are neither not XCOM nor not staff. Is that correct?
Recording is back on, Olivia.
Thank you very much, Julia. So just welcome back. We had a short discussion regarding security studies that were asked by the board on the use of non-delegated top-level domains and dotless domain names. There is a concern that with regards to dotless names and perhaps also some aspect of the use of non-delegated TLDs, the information received from the ESSAC was quite clear, and therefore it was decided that the chair of the ALAC, i.e. myself, would be sending a letter to the chair of the board to ask for the board rationale behind the launch of these new studies. And that pretty much closes that agenda item. And we will now move over to the last bit of business, and that's any other business. Julie, you still have your hand up? Is this a new hand?
Oh, sorry. No, I'll put it down. Sorry.
Thank you. Cheryl Langdonor.
Thank you very much. It's a piece of preemptive advice. The feedback is just killing me. In the next week, it should have been today, but you know how things are. Once legal finishes with it, you will see an announcement, for expressions of interest for the chair-elect of the 2014 nominating committee. And I don't know whether the community, the ALAC and the at-large community would have people who they would consider suitable to put themselves forward. But in fact, I did want to just remind the ALAC and the at-large community that the 2013 nominating committee has been run, in fact, by ALAC. And so it might be deemed politically expedient if perhaps not suggesting that people shouldn't put their names in, but I would not be crestfallen if the board decision based on board governance committee advice may not be that we will not continue to expect chair and chair-elect to basically come from ALAC and at large. So I just wanted to let you all know that announcement was coming out so that any of you who were interested may in fact put their expression of interest together, but at the same time point out that you have had a 2013 NOMCOM that's been chair and chair-elect. And indeed, if you look at the assistant chair with Adam Peake taking that role, you've had a very strong guiding hand from the at-large community this year. So perhaps that shouldn't be expected to be the norm forevermore. And with the announcement, you'll notice something which I think is relatively exciting, and I wanted you to all know I am 100% supportive of. It actually is a call because all future calls will be, we believe, written in this way for expressions of interest for 2014 chair and chair-elect. So, Olivier, have you got your head around that? The reason being, what we want to do, and Urio and I are in absolute agreement with the Board Governance Committee here, is improve the accountability and transparency of the Nominating Committee even further, and that includes its leadership. Therefore, in this June-July period, both Urio and I will be undergoing a proper 360-degree review process. And obviously, whilst it is assumed that the chair-elect is the incumbent and will be confirmed as the chair of the following year, it is going to be in future standard operational practice to have their merit tested with a 360-degree feedback system before that actually happens. And I thought that you will would all be rather pleased to hear that, particularly those of you who've found the mysteries of what happens in a NOMCOM
a little bit challenging in the past. So when you see the call for chair and chair-elect expressions of interest, fear not. Read the whole document properly. There is an absolute presumption that I will be taking the mantle unless for some interesting reason I totally fail a 360-degree review. And just to warn you, and this is the other reason for me bringing it up now in any other business, because it should influence you as you make your selections for your NomCom representatives. It is the intention of the Board Governance Committee and the presumed chair of 2014 NomCom that in 2014 every member of the nominating committee will be having a 360-degree review, and that will be available to the appointing communities as well. So,
thank you very much, Cheryl. Is this going to be publicised? The
an announcement. I'm surprised it's not out today.
Okay, because that's something. That's definitely something to mention to those people that will. Go on the nominating committee and make sure that they know that they will be under...
Yeah.
No?
Let me be really clear. No, that won't be in the announcement that calls the expression of interest, because Bruce and I agreed while we were drafting that would muddy the waters. But the NomCom, this year's NomCom, will be told that when they meet, when Bruce comes to a meeting in 2 or 3 weeks' time. So this year's NomCom don't even know that yet. So it's a bit early to tell you all. I'm just giving you a heads up. Will, as an appointing group, you've got an advantage now because you know the standards that we'll be applying from next year on.
The question, though, that I was asking you is whether the people who are candidates now for going on the NomCom, will those be told before they apply for the NomCom that they will be under 360 scrutiny?
No, probably not, unless the notes from the NomCom meeting that we brief this lot is made public in the report cards. What we can do is let me deal with BGC on that. Because we were planning on discussing it publicly in Durban. And, of course, they'll be appointed, hopefully, by Durban. I might have to work directly with the chairs of the different groups, the same as I am with you now.
Okay, thank you. I just find that there's worth in actually informing those people who are going for the position that they will be subjected to a 360 review, because we might find that some people would be against that, especially if the 360 is made public. Do I understand the 360, the results of the 360 will be made public?
Well,
Olivier, this is Evan. I'm sorry to interject here, but I really need to ask why this is being done at the executive and not at the full ALAC. There is nothing being said here that need not, and in fact, should be brought to the entire ALAC. I don't know why.
I'm perfectly happy to do that when we have the next meeting. This has happened between the ALAC meeting and now.
Well,
okay.
The call is going on very long, and it's going way off topic to something that's specifically...
Okay, fine. If you find it irrelevant, that's fine.
No, Cheryl. It's not irrelevant. It's just really, really long. I'm about to cut out as I go into an elevator, and I'm just saying a combination of this meeting going really long and a subject that should, in fact, be going to the entire ALAC is
just
a double reason.
Give me a block on next month's meeting, Olivier, and the timeliness of that.
Then you can add it. Okay, perfect. Let's do that then. Let's have you for, 10 minutes? Will that be enough?
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, staff, please add that. Last, Alan Greenberg.
Yeah, just two comments. The news about the 360 reviews that will be made available to the appointing organizations, if not more public, is absolutely music to my ears. So I thank you for that. I hope the people doing the reviews will be told to be exceedingly candid.
In fact, they're independently run. We're actually, the Board Governance Committee is employing a third party to do Urio and I.
I understand, but some reviews are done with the context of if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything.
Oh, no.
I'm hoping not in this case.
Definitely
that's number
not
one.
The case, Alan. And,
good.
And to that end, one would assume that in the 360 review of your NOMCOM appointees, you, as the appointing body, would also be putting someone in as a reviewer.
That's fine. My other comment is with regard to the three people who are instrumental in this year's NOMCOM coming from At Large or ALAC. All of you have also had illustrious backgrounds in other parts of ICANN prior to that.
Thank you for noticing. But I'm just saying, I think you've had a great trifecta.
I believe
you've had a good trifecta.
And noted and appreciated, but each of the three have also had histories outside of At Large, so thank you.
Very true.
Thank you, Alan. I just did raise my eyebrow when I heard the fact that maybe there would not be one more ALAC or At Large person as the next chair, or it seemed that it's At Large that's running the current NOMCOM. I mean, I would have understood if the job was not done correctly, but as I understand, the job is done correctly. So I just find it very bizarre that there is this discrimination,
wait.
I think is the word, against people that come from At Large.
Having a dynasty may not go down well with the next ATRT.
Anyway, let's just cut this now. We're losing time. I know that it's been a very, very long call. Any other business from anyone? I don't see anyone putting their hand up. I thank all of you for being on this call. We've done a lot of work today, so I really appreciate, and I hope that you can have a good weekend after this, all of you. So thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. This call is now adjourned.
Thank you, Olivia.
Good night, Julie.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Good night.
Thanks, everyone. Have a lovely weekend.
Thank you.
The meeting has been adjourned and the audio will now be disconnected. Thank you for attending.